Welcome to the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast, where we remember a time when stacks of cards were held together with rubber bands and Mickey Mantles were put in bike spokes. We hope you will enjoy and reminisce as you come along with us as we tell stories about the baseball cards from the Golden Age of Baseball. We will examine the state of the vintage baseball card market and talk to some of the greatest collectors in the hobby. You won't be hearing us talk about any chrome or shiny cards here. Now, to take you on this retrospective journey, here's your host, direct from the shallow end of the gene pool, my son, Mike Moynihan.
Yo, and hello everybody, Mike here. And welcome to another episode of the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast. Guys, it is opening week for baseball. And I know this is a vintage show, but you still, if you're a baseball fan, this is one of those times of year where you're just in a great mood. You got the new season starting. My team for the next 6 months, 7 months is going to be the World Series champion still. Hopefully they can defend their title, but not likely. It's hard to do that in baseball, but it is just hope springs eternal right now for everybody that's a baseball fan of your particular team that you're a fan of. I'm no different. And so Thursday's going to be a great day for me, opening day for the Rangers. I don't know when all the team, I can't even remember when all the teams open. Obviously the Dodgers and the Padres have already played in Korea. But the rest of us are going to start sometime this week. And then you've got Easter weekend, a nice long weekend coming up. So I hope you have great plans with your family to do something fun to celebrate Easter. So today, this episode is directly influenced by one of you guys, a listener out there, a watcher. And I'm going to read his comment in a second and give him props. But I want to bring in on my guest and do this because this week I've got Sammy Thunder. Sammy, what's up, man? How are you doing?
Hey, Mike. How you doing? Good to be here.
Good to have you. Yeah. We just did a little home and home, and ironically, our discussions are going to be relatively similar. I was on your channel a couple days ago, and by the time this airs, it'll be. But we shot these back to back. That's how it works in YouTube content creation land. You take a block of time and you make it work. So I do appreciate you being here, Sammy. I want to read you something because your background as a collector slash dealer, you know, you set up at some shows mostly, but you attend quite a few shows. You go to a lot of different shows. And I got a comment from someone. I want to read it to you about shows. And then we're going to discuss it. And I want to give props to Aaron. Yeah, I don't want to say his last name on the air, but Aaron sent me this yesterday, and I thought, that's perfect. We will talk about that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read this to you. It's kind of long, so be patient with me.
No problem.
He says, you may have already done a podcast about this, and if so, my apologies for not listening to it. I would love to hear your thoughts on strategies of how you negotiate prices with sellers slash dealers. I left the Dallas Card Show with one post-war rookie Hall of Famer that I needed. I tried on at least a dozen others, but they were all sticking to a price above market. Overpaying for a card after card can add up quickly. Next thing you know, you've overpaid so much. You could have bought a low-grade 51 Mantle with all that overage. For example, I couldn't come to a deal on a 57 Brooks, but he had a Reggie rookie, SGC6. I recently got one for $480, so I was interested in his thought process. So he's talking to the dealer. The sticker said $900. He said the best he could do was $725. I showed him my eBay order and his response was, you got lucky on that one. I showed him multiple other auction sales and his reply was, other people will pay a premium for this card. I let it be, but I did ask him, are you a seller or are you here to show off your collection? I think this is a comment that resonates with a lot of people out there in terms of maybe some frustration, you know, all of that. What's your initial thoughts when you hear Aaron's comment?
I commend Aaron for going the distance with a dealer in discussing sales and prices because it's such an intimidating thing to do. I generally don't like doing it myself. I don't have, maybe it's my like slight anxiety of having to go toe to toe with the dealer in terms of trying to get to a price. But when you're so far off, it's just not worth the energy, in my opinion. And it's just better when it comes to those kind of cards, especially like we talked about this. It's best to kind of just keep your options open and look out of the tables because you will probably find those cards to be a lot cheaper. We can't go in the minds of dealers and understand why they price the way they do. There's varying reasons. From my experience, from what I've seen, I mean, maybe that dealer bought that Reggie Jackson for a pretty penny at one point and is just trying to recoup their investment. There's so many different reasons. So, you know, in those circumstances, again, I commend Aaron for doing that, for trying to work out a deal. But, you know, it's probably, you know, just best to let it go and see if there's other opportunities out elsewhere. So that's my impression.
Yeah, I think it'd be good. We'll do this kind of back and forth a little bit where I'm happy to share how I approach dealers. I think it'll be different than yours and in a good way in that people can hear both of us talk about it and decide, okay, I'll incorporate some of the things Mike does maybe, or I'm not even like Mike at all. I can't do that. I'm more like Sammy. And I think that's good to have multiple perspectives on an issue like this, which can be sensitive. It can be intimidating. It can be scary. But I always, at the end of the day, we'll start with this premise. There's a card that you want to buy and there's a card that this dealer wants to sell, right? And you want to pay as little as you can. He wants to get as much as he can. And so I usually say there's going to be a price in there somewhere that you're both not going to be happy with. And that's usually a good price. You're going to probably pay more than you want and he'll sell it for less than he wants. That'll be what it is. At the end of the day, to me, a dealer's job is to move inventory, is to get through inventory. And the idea that you mentioned about a dealer having a certain amount into a card, I've never felt like that was my problem. I'm sorry you overpaid for it. That's not what they're going for now. I don't know what to tell you other than too bad, you know. And so many dealers are afraid to take L's. You know, they do not want to lose on any card. And I think like you said, you can't get into the minds of dealers. It's hard to know what they're thinking, but that feels like such a narrow-minded way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from my experiences of being kind of a lower time dealer at shows, because I do a lot of the smaller shows, but from those experiences, I mean, I've taken losses on cards before, and it's not a great feeling, you know. Obviously, you never want to lose on a deal. But yeah, it's understandable. I mean, there's other factors that go into it. I'm trying to remember what it was. There's something else that came up, but I can't think of it right now in terms of why dealers would do that. But yeah, I mean, so for me, when I go to shows now, I mean, my collection preferences have shifted quite a bit since our last discussion last year. And so what I'm trying to find is very narrow in terms of tables and that have these sort of deals. So like I was showing you before we went on the air, the Heyer's Root Beer Willie Mays that I just picked up, the only table that had it was Ash's table. Nobody else had that card. And when I looked at it, and you know, it wasn't really on my radar, but I saw Ash had it listed for $1,100. And
you mean that card?
Yeah. Yep. I might as well show mine as well while we're at it. So yeah, this one I bought for $950 off Ash. He looked at comps. I looked at comps. We saw that an SGC3 sold for just over $1,000. this is a PSA 4, and to me, this one has the appeal of even higher. I mean, we all know grading is subjective, so if I really wanted to crack this and take the risk, I could, but I'm happy with the way it looks, or the way with what it is now. That's another topic. But yeah, Ash was like, listen, I'll stick with 950. I'll do that deal. And I thought, yeah, it's a no-brainer, because if an SGC3 just sold for $1,000, I'm getting this for 950. Sure. That's fair. I don't want to gouge Ash any more than that. I think it's a very fair price. I probably, and that's just me. I can't get it. I mean, if I feel as though the price is fair and it's, it's right for the picking, I'm not going to try to jab at the dealer, because I think it's unfair to the dealer at that point. And maybe it's just my experience of being at shows and, just trying to go even further down below than what's already a good deal. So that's my two cents on it. And it also kind of establishes a ground with Ash and I going forward. So like if I want to buy another card from him, there's opportunities and prior experiences of buying stuff with him.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I think that's a unique situation where the card was already priced very fairly, right? If it was at 1500 or 1200, right? Then you might, even at 1200 for a grade higher in a PSA slab, probably not a crazy price, right? And so I'm just saying that's a unique situation where you already felt like it was a good deal. I remember at the National one year, a few years ago, there was a guy that had a 51 Bowman George Kell, not an expensive car, it was PSA 4 or whatever, but he had $15 on it, which was already a screaming deal. And I had the audacity to ask him for $10, and he took it, and I paid $10, for a Hall of Fame 51 Bowman card, slabbed up. So I am one of those that will always, no matter how great of a deal it is, I am going to ask something less than sticker. And I've caught a lot of grief lately because I, am selling some cards, and I put in the video when I talked about it, I said, I'm not going to haggle. I'm already putting these at all very fair prices. I don't want to be haggling with everybody. And I'm the one who is such a stickler for never pay sticker. So it's very ironic. And it seems kind of funny that I would say something like that to people buying cards from me, but that's the way I approach every deal. And I recognize that, that's very contradictory, but I'm always going to try to get something better. Even if it's $10, even if 950 turns to 9.25 or 940, I'll at least ask. The worst they can say, here's the first piece of advice to anybody negotiating. The worst you can do is ask and them say no. And I always do it very open-ended. I find that if you start with, hey, can you do any better on this? Or if you ask what's your lowest price, I think the words you use is very, very important, right? I think that your selection of what actual words you say is important. I think your tone is important. I think your body language is important. You're telling a story to this dealer. And if you really want the card, I always act very nonchalant about it, because the truth is I can walk down and get it somewhere else too, because the stuff I'm looking for is Bowman and Top stuff that's relatively common, right? Mm-hmm. Try not to tip your hand as best you can, but I think asking, can you do any better on this? Do you have any room on this is another thing you can ask. I think those are two questions asking a dealer is never a bad thing to ask. And it's not asking for a specific price. It's not asking them to take a certain percentage off or whatever. You're just asking, hey, do you have any room on this?
That's definitely strategies I definitely need to implement more. I try to keep I think that's the biggest difference between you and I, is that I try to keep the negotiations at a minimum. It might be foolish, but I'm very, very careful. So when it comes to buying a card like the Hires Root Beer that I did, I saw what Ash had it stickered at. And I agree with you. I don't want to pay sticker. I mean, nobody wants to pay sticker price, but You're absolutely right. It's just a matter of comfort, experience of doing the, I mean, you've been doing it for so long. So, it makes sense that you've kind of established a way, an approach that, just takes time. So for me, it's just something that I have to do repeatedly and just get comfortable with doing it. And you're right. It doesn't hurt to ask the question. At the time when I was buying it, I was thinking, well, maybe Ash would take 900 for it. But, at that point, we were looking at comps. And like I mentioned, the SGC3 sold for 1,000. And in my heart, I felt like 950 was a fair offer. And I was okay with taking it for that price.
I get it. I totally get that on that deal.
But it's like I mentioned, it just takes time, takes experience and a certain level of comfort to do it. And I don't know, maybe it's the card that you're going after as well. If there's the same card at five or six other tables down the row, it makes a huge difference. The Heyer's Root Beer is one that is probably not going to be available at your regional show. But that's why the internet is your friend too. You can probably find it on eBay selling right now, but it's all circumstantial. Certain things come up when they do.
Obviously, each situation is completely unique, and I'm acknowledging that. That is so true. But I do think if you have just some general thoughts about how you want to approach every dealer, you can approach each dealer the same way. And then it morphs into its own uniqueness as the discussion happens. I don't like negotiations to take a long time. Mm-hmm. And either to me, floor time is valuable time at a show, whether you're in Dallas, Nashville, Strongsville, the National, wherever you are, your local mall show, doesn't matter. I want to get through and see what I want to see. I'm not there to waste my day, right? Kind of thing. Right. And so I think that asking that open-ended question, and if the answer is no, at least you know where you stand. At least you know, okay, this is it. Is this a good deal or not? Yes or no. And so as Aaron was saying in his comment, over and over, he kept seeing that. And I've had the last few shows I've been to the absolute opposite experience. I have found dealers willing to deal, willing to get closer to my price. And I always, so here's the back and forth, right? Hey, can you do any better on that? Well, and let's say a card's $1,000. We'll just use a bigger card. Well, I think I could do $850 or something like that. Typically, it'll come with this type of a look. And if you're listening on podcasts, you won't see it, but I'm like, I don't know. And then I will throw back a price. Typically I'll say, I was really wanting to be, I think 700 is more fair. And my dad always taught me, make them tell you you're crazy at least twice, because you darn sure don't get anything that you don't ask for. And so if I say 700, which is a number I might feel really good by, like if I got it for 700, I'd feel like I was getting a really good deal. Then he might say yes, might not, but probably he's going to come back. Well, okay, look, I can do 800, but that's it. That's as far as I'm going. Okay. Well, I just saved $50 from the 850 if I can get him there. And that's $50 I can apply towards another card. As Aaron was correctly pointing out in his message of, hey, every bit of overage that you pay for one card is that much less that you have to spend on the next card. And so I think about that constantly, about maximizing my dollars. And so it's, and that might turn into, no, man, I throw out the 700, some crazy number, right? That I would never expect him to say yes to, but at least now he knows where I am on the card. And he may not know, man, really, I think 850 is the best I can do, seriously. And I said, okay. And then I might go, I'll do 800 cash right now, if you'll do it. I'll come up closer,
Yeah.
And again, he might say no. and no, I'm really at 850 again, then I have a decision to make. Am I okay with 850, or am I not going to be okay with 850? And usually if we get more to the dealer's number, I might wait a little bit. Well, I'll come back, or I'll think about it. You know, not always. It's again, unique, right? I might just buy it. Okay. You know, I really want this car. This is the eye appeal that I want, or whatever, right? There's every situation, but I'm not afraid to walk away. And that's such a key discipline that all card people should have. You want to never look desperate, and B, never want to really be desperate. And so you can look not desperate, but you also really need to not be desperate and say, okay, let me just put this down, walk it around. And there are times, Sammy, I'll tell you, you've probably had this experience. You see a card, you really like it. The price is reasonable, right? It's close or whatever. You set it down, I walk away. And man, if I'm thinking about that card 30 minutes later, an hour later, I know I need to go buy it, because like, okay, I'm still thinking about it. I haven't moved on. My brain is still churning on that card that I passed on however long ago. The next day, most of the time, especially at the National, I'll see a card, I'll go back. If I'm thinking about it when I wake up in the morning, or think about it at night after the show, I know that's the first place I'm going in the morning, is to buy that card that I've been thinking about. Have you, that happened to you?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a particular situation that comes to mind. I mean, pretty much I got to look at the wall here and figure out which one, because these are all the big purchases. I mean, a lot of the times, a lot of this stuff that I've bought was kind of sort of on the spot. I haven't really walked away from something and been able to come back and buy it. Haven't had those, too many of those experiences. A lot of the times it's just, you know, a lot of these cards are just kind of like work out a deal on the spot then and there. But I mean, I've definitely had those times where I have thought about a card and then gone back and found out it was sold. So those are tough to take, but it happens.
Have you ever had a situation where you bought a card and later saw it's cheaper at another dealer, or later just had kind of buyer's remorse that you may have overpaid?
Yeah, no, that's happened before. I have this the Willie Mays stand up. I bought that one at a show, and I paid a good amount for it, but then I saw it at another table that was going for a little bit less. But then I took a closer look at it. Like initially before taking a closer look at it, I'm like, oh, that's terrible. You know, I could have gotten it much cheaper. But then I got a closer look at it, and the color was a lot more faded on that one. So I'm like, okay. And actually, it's funny because I saw that same card again recently. So it's been sitting in that guy's case for at least 6 to 8 months. So I'm thinking, all right, you know, maybe the one I did buy was actually the better pickup. Because, I mean, it's graded a 2, but it's only because somebody wrote on the back. But it doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah, I rarely regret once I buy a card. I kind of just go, all right, I made the decision with the best information that I had. Once I buy a card, I don't go back. I'm not looking all the time at prices of those cards. I'm looking at cards. I look at prices of cards that I still want to get, not cards I already own, because that's a done deal. There's no fixing that. You know, whether you're kicking yourself for overspending or whatever, I never do that. And there doesn't seem to be any point to it other than making yourself feel bad.
Right.
You know, so just live with your decision, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And don't, I have had plenty of where I've walked away, thought about the card, gone back, and the card's gone. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, that's happened to me. In fact, I remember those situations and scenarios more than I remember the great deals that I've gotten over the years. Those stick with me, and that's probably good, because it's a lesson that I've learned that, hey, if you really like it, it's okay to buy it, you know?
It's like a poker player. They only remember the bad hands, the bad beats. So it's very similar.
It is.
Yeah, it's. I mean, as of late, the stuff that I have been buying has, I feel like I've gotten some good deals on it, and yeah, again, it's just I've been very selective. So if I find that more than one or two dealers have that card, then I'm very cautious in terms of what they're pricing it at. But to go back to what you're saying, I mean, I think honestly, everything from your body language and the way that you interact with the dealer, and there's so many factors that go into a negotiation. And it's definitely food for thought, because it's something that I really need to work on implementing, especially at Strongsville and the National. I think this is going to be a good testing point for me to be able to try to change the way that I approach a dealer and interact with them when it comes to a car that I'm interested in.
Well, another thing for Aaron or anyone else is I think there's value, and it's worth the time and how much money you're going to save in building some rapport with the dealer. If you see the dealer's got you've got a lot of really great stuff. You know, I compliment the dealer, and I never lie, right? I'm not going to tell the dealer he has great stuff if he really doesn't. If he does, which if I'm looking at your table and I'm looking at your showcase, you probably have some really great stuff. And so I'll say, you have really great stuff, man. That 62 Topps Willie McCovey, man, that's the last card I need for his run. I've really been looking for that. That's a great copy that you have. You know, why does it matter to me? Because I have found that dealers care very much about helping collectors. They may be money grubbing, and certainly they got to make a profit, and I get all, they're running a business. I get that. But I think a lot of them have the heart of a collector and they get it when, oh man, this is the last McCovey I need. I'm not going to tell them it's the last McCovey I need if it's not the last McCovey I need, but if it is, or if it's, oh man, I only need two more McCoveys, this is one of them. You know, I know where I am on these cards and why they're important to me and why they're going in my collection, and that I want to give them the truth that I'm not a reseller. I'm not buying this card to turn around and flip it for more money at my table next door or whatever, right? I am wanting to buy this to go into my collection. And I think that resonates with people. So having that quick discussion, whatever time it takes, every time you can build that rapport, you're knocking dollars off the price.
I will say one thing, though, to add to that. Aaron mentioned that he was showing recent sales and comps, and that's fine to do, but I think there's a boundary that needs to be set there, because you can sour the possibility of any sort of deal happening when you're really harping on showing, like, these are the sales. I experienced it at the Philly show, and I'm not saying that the buyer was wrong in this case. I'm not saying that the seller was wrong. It's just I can't remember what card it was, but there was a card that a buyer wanted at the Philly show, and there was a dealer who had a price on it. The buyer was very interested in it, but the dealer said, I'll give you this for this amount. This is what I can do. And the buyer was not happy with it. It was showing comps, and the dealer got very frustrated, very upset, and set and just kind of shoot him away, essentially. And I think there's a fine line. You just have to be, you don't want to cross over into trading, becoming a thing where it's trading insults and being rude. And
yeah,
I just wanted to mention that as well. I think that's important to make note, because you don't want to cross that line.
I totally agree that using comps against a dealer is something you should tread lightly doing. You need to know what the comps are. And sometimes here's how you can ask it. How did you come up with that price?
Yeah.
I'm curious, Mr. Dealer, you know, Sammy, you know, that's a really great card. You have it priced here. how'd you come up with that? What made you put that sticker on it? And then they might say, well, I looked up comps last week or whatever. And you did? Cause I looked them up too. And you know, you're pretty far off. Oh really? Where, you know, and that can lead to a productive discussion if you're careful about, again, your words matter. The way you say something matters. If you're saying it from the perspective of that, basically you're being a crook by pricing your card this way. Congratulations. You just wiped out a deal. Potentially you just talk.
Yeah.
You have to be careful. Right. And so I agree with you. You got to be careful. You got to tread lightly, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't use comps. It just means use them selectively, use them carefully.
I had a situation at a show. It didn't get out of hand, but there was a guy who came by, and I had an 81-82 Topps basketball set, and you know, I had it priced, which I thought was pretty fair. I don't think it was outrageous, but he was looking through it, and he started commenting on how like poor condition the cards were, which I don't think they were awful. I thought they were, you know, they were, nothing was creased. Everything was very clean. And I didn't really say anything back. I kind of just, you know, shrugged at him and thought, you know, that's kind of, you really shouldn't go through a binder or go through a set and start like saying, oh, that's a bad card. That's a bad card. That's a bad card. That's not, or not a bad, but that's not a great condition card. I mean, it's all a fine line. I think you're absolutely right. And this is a good learning opportunity for myself, as well as anybody else that watches this and listens to this, that it's all about changing the way you ask, whether your body language and just changing the way you have the conversation, instead of saying, well, I saw this comp for this, and says, well, as you mentioned, how did you come to that price? And also the way you say it too. Because you can say that two different ways, and the dealer could be either receptive or completely insulted.
It's an overall approach, right? It's all about how you're approaching the situation. And guy, you just said something that I wanted to bring up and elaborate on because I thought it was a good point. Oh gosh, I need to write stuff down. Okay. That was really good. Okay, so I think as people are listening to this and thinking about it, everybody's different, right? And this is a learned skill. You know, this isn't something that you're typically just not born with. These amazing negotiating skills and these strategies to go in. And you're going to screw it up, right? It's not like you're going to be perfect at it at the beginning. And so give yourself some grace to kind of work your way into what your approach should be, because your personality has a lot to do with it, right? If you're an introvert or an extrovert I remember the guy down talking the cards. That was a big deal to me because you said, I thought was really important. If I'm looking at a card, I'm telling the dealer all the good things I see about the card. I'm not nitpicking it to try to get the price down. I want to be as positive as I can in that moment. I want everything to be good vibes sending across the table, not, dude, this is a trash too. You know, I'll give you this. It's like, well, why are you even buying it if you're going to just completely poo-poo all over it? You know, as a dealer, that's what I would be thinking. Like, if you're just going to trash my card, you can move on. You know, I'm going to say, man, for a two, this looks really good. I mean, this is a really nice card. I love it. You know, I'm giving positive vibes, right? Not, man, this is a crappy two. I'll only give you, you know, whatever. It's just not the right approach.
No. So, well, yeah, I mean, as you know, working on the other side of the table that day, it was kind of, I mean, listen, that's not, from the time that I've been doing it, I've seen a lot of approaches like that, and just kind of shrugged it off and, you know, just, you know, hold my ground and not get knocked over, because in those situations, you just have to say, well, listen, I understand I get what you're saying, but this is the price that I have it at. I think for what it's worth, the cards are in good shape. And I've had some other people that, you know, have mentioned that there's that they've had interest in it. So I'm going to stay where I'm at on it and not have it blow up into a really like trading insults and going back and forth. And, you know, it is what it is. That's just the life of being an amateur dealer and just, you know, selling to collect, and you experience all types of buyers. So.
Well, I think overall you catch more flies with honey, right? And yeah. I think just being positive, being nice, being telling stories, getting engaging with the dealer can do nothing but help you. Will it assure that a deal gets done? No, definitely not. I've had times where I thought I was really getting along with a guy and he just stuck to his guns and I walked away. That's okay.
Yeah.
Because again, you'll find the card, and as much as you love the Hires root beer, those can be found. You know, if you didn't get it that show, you'll have other opportunities, and you have to think the long game of collecting. This is the last thing I want to leave with you, Aaron, and anyone else that's getting something out of this, is that think long term. You don't have to have it today. I promise you're going to see it again, unless it's super unique, super rare. There are exceptions to what I'm telling you, but by and large, most cards that you're going to want to buy are out there for the taking, whether they're on eBay, whether you'll go to another show. And I've always had this long game approach. I have a list of 450 cards or whatever that I'm wanting to buy. I don't care which ones I get today, and I may not get any today at this show or whatever, but I'm not going to overpay just to overpay, because I realize in the long game how much I can add to the collection by stretching my dollars as far as they'll go. And, you know, that's also important when you're thinking about which grading companies you want to buy, which grades you want to buy of certain cards, and being willing to be flexible in your own mind about what you want to buy. If you said, I want a PSA 5 of this card, and you see a nice 4 for a cheap price, what's your holdup? You know, I mean, that always makes me laugh when people tell me they do that, because I'm like, well, why didn't you just buy the 4? Well, I really want a 5 for my registry or for whatever. And I'm like, dude, I'm a registry guy. So I get it to a degree, but I'm not such a grade snob where I can't see the writing on the wall and see a good deal when it's staring me in the face. And okay, I'll take the 4 at that, because now I can buy 2 more cards or whatever, you know, instead of sticking to that, I've got to have this. And I think the narrow-mindedness that some collectors get into, I think it's dangerous, because it causes you to overpay, because you'll only take this. And that feels like you just boxed yourself in. The dealer has all the leverage. If I'm willing to be flexible in condition and, you know, reading company or whatever.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can't say I fully grasp those that have to have certain grades in certain years, because I kind of look at the card based on not so much the grade, but if I'm buying a graded card, I'll look at the certain preferences that I have in mind for buying it. And, you know, so if it presents well, then, and if it's like a 1 or a 2 and it presents super well and, you know, it fits with what I'm looking for, absolutely. It's just, grading is, the number can, as you mentioned, can be dangerous, because then, yeah, you end up overpaying, because some dealer might think that they're 5 because it's so super centered and so sharp and it's the premier of all 5s, and you have to pay the price of a 6 for a 5. So, you know, it can be very dangerous and quite substantially expensive to go down that road.
And some people will pay a premium for a very great example in a grade. You know, they might pay on the upper end of what 5s go for in the example we're talking about. I did that for my Mantle rookie. I paid up for my five because it was so sharp. I paid at the top end of what fives went for. And it's rare that I do that, but not unknown to me to do that when I see one that just looks really good for the grade. But you don't have to do that either. You can hold out. But I guess I want to leave everybody with, as we finish up here, be patient. You know, just it can get frustrating. I get it. I'm more of a, I'm going to stick to my guns because I'm playing the long game. I'm going to stick to what I think is a good deal. I'm not going to overpay just to buy something. And I think that's just how I've, you know, developed my approach over the decades. Any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying in terms of overpaying, and you got to be very cautious. There's some cards that I've bought here that I probably had paid market value for. And I'm all for exhibiting patience, but there have been times where I've kind of took the plunge and decided to get it at that moment just because I felt very strongly connected with the card that was there. That being said, you know, it all depends. I think it all depends on the card that you're buying and your desire for it. And if it fits with what you're looking to do at that present moment. And just got to go with, sometimes you have to go with your instincts on things, and sometimes it works. And I think a lot of times it works. And it's just having fun and stretching your hobby dollar as much as you can.
Well, I'm excited that you even said you think you may have gotten some ideas on how to adjust your approach going forward. That makes me feel good.
So I'll leave that. I'll end on that note that hearing what you mentioned definitely opened up my mind to trying to get past that comfort, that discomfort that I have sometimes with dealers. So I found this to be very, very helpful for me. And I'll try to implement some of these different strategies and kind of loosen up my body language so I'm not feeling so uptight, because I generally do when I go to dealers. So I think that's going to be a good chance to try to exhibit some of that when I go to the Strongsville and the National this year.
Well, I'll be excited to see how everybody, we're all learning, right? I'm still learning. I'm not perfect at any of this. I just, doing it over and over again helps, right? Practice is a good thing. And so I hope everybody out there learned something they could take away from this, or at least reinforced what you're already doing. And you're like, yep, that's awesome. That's what I do. That's great. I hope that you felt that way too. And Sammy, thanks again for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
You're very welcome. All right, guys, we'll catch you guys next week for another episode. Hope you have a good one. And go Rangers. Enjoy some baseball this weekend. We'll see you later. Keep collecting.
Take care.